Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And we're coming to you live, recorded from our new fancy studio here for a test. So I hope everyone has a great time and everything sounds great. Today, we're going to get into some fun facts about Prince Edward Island that show its charm and character. I'll do the first five, and then you can do the last five.
Sounds like a plan.
Or would you like to do it the other way around?
Nope, you can start.
Or would you like to alternate them?
No.
Number one, home of the giant lobster roll. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Well, it is. So if you love lobster, come to Prince Edward Island. On every corner, you're going to be able to find lobster sandwiches and seafood, just about in every restaurant, right?
Most restaurants, you can find a lobster roll, and usually pretty good.
We're the birthplace of Confederation. And one day, House of Confederation, the renovation will be done because it seems like it's been going on for 20 years.
Yes, it's been going on just after I moved here is when the scaffolding all showed up on the outside of the building.
15 years ago.
16 years this year.
Boy, that federal government knows how to get things done. So at the birthplace of Confederation, where leaders met in 1864 to lay the groundwork for Canada as a nation. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
What was it like back then?
That's pretty funny, Michael. The stone walkway on, I can't remember what the name of that street is, still exists that our forefathers walked on. It's pretty impressive to walk. This takes you right down to Peaks Key, that whole area there. They are the original sidewalks. Did you know that?
I knew that, and I've walked them.
Yes.
The island loves its potatoes. PEI produces about 25% of Canada's potatoes. That's over a billion pounds annually. There's even a Canadian Potato Museum in O'Leary, which would be west of Summerside.
Yes, you have to love the potatoes.
Anne of Green Gables lives here. Everyone's heard of Anne of Green Gables. When I first came here, every time I looked at a building, Anne had done something there.
Yes, Anne of Green Gables is a character for a story.
Lucy Maud Montgomery set her iconic Anne of Green Gables books in PEI, and fans from all over the world still visit Green Gables in Cavendish.
And her books are still used for English classes around the world.
And there's other locations on the island which are Anne of Green Gables friendly as well. I know there is a schoolhouse or something in Bedeque, New London. You can look around. Number five, red sand beaches. Everyone knows about the red sand at PEI, I would hope. The island's famous red sand comes from its high iron oxide content. These beaches are a unique sight and great for sandcastle building.
A little bit of a little tip, don't bring a white towel to a red sandy beach.
Which is another reason in PEI, speaking of real estate, why we wouldn't use white stucco on a house, because inevitably that red sand is going to make your house red.
Yes, it will, usually, especially if you're close to the water. Number six, the Confederation Bridge is massive. At 12.9 kilometers, it is the longest bridge in the world over ice-covered waters, connecting Prince Edward Island to New Brunswick. So it is something to behold and see, and many people buy properties on Prince Edward Island that actually have views of the Confederation Bridge. It is so impressive.
Confederation Bridge, a view thereof, a wharf, and what else? A lighthouse. Those three things, if you have them in a property in PEI, and the bridge view can't be like right in your face. It has to be somewhat distant. Say Augustine Cove, Cape Traverse, going the other way, Union Corner. If they have that, people will pay for that view of one or more of those things.
Most, not everybody likes the marvel of a man-made bridge, as I have come across clients in the past that said, the bridge doesn't do anything for me. But number seven, you can dig for clams. Visitors can actually dig for their own clams, mussels, and oysters on the beach. And some tours will even cook them for you right there. Now, I will give another little tidbit tip that a fisherman had informed a client of mine.
What was his name?
I am not giving out names.
How tall was he?
I don't. Well, I do know how tall he was, probably close to 6 feet. But the little tip, if you're coming here to Prince Edward Island, you can probably pick one of these up at the dollar store, is a toilet plunger. You take that to the beach and you can actually use the plunger to extract or bring the clams to the surface. Number 8, shellfish royalty. PEI oysters are world-renowned, especially Malbec oysters, which were once voted best in the world at the Paris World Fair in the 1900s. I didn't know that, Michael. Number 9, more than 90 beaches. For such a small island, Prince Edward Island is packed with over 90 beaches, each with its own vibe, some sandy, some rocky, and some particularly empty. Number 10, Prince Edward Island has a vibrant arts scene, from summer theater festivals to, I don't know how to pronounce this, CEILIDHS.
That's a word I could never pronounce.
Thanks for giving this to me. Kitchen.
Kaylee.
Is that how we...
Kaylee.
We're doing well. We don't even know how to pronounce a word. Kitchen parties with music. The island is buzzing with creative energy all year round. And there are many artisans. It just seems to attract that from people you'll see with their art easels, drawing the sunset over a beautiful beach setting to the moon up in the sky, dancing on the ripples on the water. It's such a beautiful place, and lots of artisans come to take advantage of the quilted landscape and the beautiful landscapes that we have during sunrise and sunset as well. So for more fun facts or something themed, you can look into history, food, quirky laws, etc. if you are looking for some more fun things about Prince Edward Island.
I actually looked into the history and there was some really bad stuff.
Okay, well, we won't go there.
Just bad in the sense that, you know, taking over the land from people that were here and things like that. It didn't make for a very uplifting podcast.
No, and it doesn't sound very respectful.
Open houses. What do they really mean? We've talked about them before, but this time I had my personal assistant, ChatGTP. Did I say it right that time?
GPT.
GPT. I don't know why I keep calling it GTP.
Many people do.
I'll stop doing that. So what does my little chat friend say about open houses? They're a lead generator for the agent. In other words, they get to put their open house signs all over the place within 30 miles of the property and have their name on them, if they're smart, and advertise an open house. Keeps the seller happy. Boy, your overpriced house that's worth $300,000 you have on for $750, that open house is going to sell it. Not.
Yes, it does. It pacifies, especially if you don't have an extensive marketing plan.
Tests the market. I don't know what my little chat friend means by that, but I suppose an open house, in a sense, if it was something very interesting, you would have offers. I find, from my experience, having done many, many open houses, the open houses that are most active are those houses that are like 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. They're 100-something years old, and people just come to take a look at the architecture. What about you?
Yes, sometimes they come for building ideas. It's a house that they want to replicate, so they'll come to an open house for that. Decorating ideas, there are those who, I know when I got into the real estate industry back in 2010, were at every open house, because that's what I used to do as a realtor to make myself visible and known. And about 5 to 7 years later, these same people were at open houses when I was looking to buy a house in Charlottetown. So you've got your open house junkies that show up at the mall.
It also provides marketing and exposure for those agents that don't have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars to market your home properly. A $50 open house sign will suffice.
Yes. Yep. Or free, because some brokerages provide an open house sign. So the most they have to do is just advertise it on realtor.ca, which costs them nothing and their time to show up in a few printouts.
ChatGPT is being sarcastic, saying sometimes they actually work. Haven't for me, What about you? How many houses have you sold in an open house?
I don't think I've sold any at an open house, but I do remember back in the day when I used to be with your brokerage, one of the agents at the office came in and was quite excited to announce that they attracted a buyer at the open house. And I'll never forget your response was, I was all excited and feeling a little envious that, ooh, that should have been an open house I did. And you just looked at me and in such a nonchalant, uninterested tone said, every once in a while, a squirrel finds a nut. And
A blind squirrel will find a nut.
Always made me laugh. And I still remember that to this day.
I remember when I started in real estate, like any newbie agent, the other agents were just so happy to take advantage of my ignorance, and they would allow me to do their open houses to pacify their clients. And I remember doing an open house on this house, and I'm showing the house to these people, and they seem quite interested. So didn't they phone their agent and make an offer through it? And I ended up with absolutely nothing.
That's happened to me many times.
That's why the only houses you open house are your own.
Yes, or you do the open house and one of the guests, the visitors, end up contacting the listing agent to create a working relationship with them because it was their listing.
At the end of the day, the conclusion from my computer friend is often ineffective for selling a house.
Or that house.
Any house.
No, it's ineffective for selling that house, I would say. And I think that's how your little friend ended up wording it anyways. You could end up selling the agent, and that agent could end up selling, inevitably, and that predominantly what ends up happening, another property.
The Canadian Real Estate Association, otherwise known as CREA, years ago, represented us in a lawsuit, spent tons of money, and lost. And what that lawsuit was over what's referred to as a mere listing, which allows people that are selling their own homes to post an MLS listing on our MLS system, which in turn gets uploaded to what you would know as realtor.ca. The challenge with this is when you're dealing with a buyer's agent, an agent that's showing you properties, we in Canada, unlike the States, because they had their own lawsuit, are allowed to advertise the selling brokerage commission. Selling brokerage commission on many of these for sale by owners is $1. In other words, they're not paying a selling brokerage commission, or you need to reach out to them if you can even find them, because typically they're very elusive because they don't want to deal with real estate agents, and that's why they're trying to sell the home on their own and don't even have their own number listed. You can attempt to negotiate a commission agreement, which if you're showing 15 or 20 houses is something I personally wouldn't be too inclined to do. So keep this in mind if you're selling your house and you're offering no commission, those agents probably may not have the time or the inclination to deal with you in order to sell your house. You'd have to have a highly motivated buyer that may, in fact, reach out to the home sellers directly.
Yes, and with regards to CREA, we were being accused of being anti-competitive, which is the grounds in which they won the lawsuit against us. With regards to not offering a selling commission online, you're absolutely right, Michael. If a buyer has a list of properties, especially untrained buyers or untrained buyer's agents or buyer's agents that have extensive experience and realize this is just going to be there's going to be a lot of friction in trying to put this deal together because obviously the seller already feels they know everything or in their defense maybe had a bad experience. But please don't put us all in the same category. If you did have a bad experience, there are other realtors out there that may actually change your viewpoint. That being said, trying to sell your property on your own, not offering a selling bonus or like a selling commission on our realtor.ca system may actually end up costing you more money than you realize because you're not a trained negotiator, even though you may think you are, unless you have some sort of accreditation or formal training, will end up costing you more money in the long run.
This is a subject I've wanted to cover for a while. What is the typical house build look like in PEI? In other words, what am I going to find here? Am I going to find a bunch of brick homes? Probably not. We don't have brick on the island, typically. And if you do have brick, good luck finding someone to put it down in the form of a brick mason.
Yeah, and that's something when I came in 2009 to Prince Edward Island for the first time and was looking around at real estate, I was a little taken back because I'm originally from Southern Ontario.
Northern Ontario.
I am not from Northern Ontario, thank you very much. I am from Cambridge, Ontario, for anyone that is wondering, where is she actually from? And a lot of the houses, there's a mix, but predominantly there's a lot of brick homes. And when I moved to Prince Edward Island, there was some pretty funky colored, not all, but there were some vinyl homes, and mostly all vinyl homes. Or something else that I had to get my head around was just the front of the house, if there was brick, and then they put vinyl on the other three sides, which—
Or stone fascia.
Yes. And that isn't something typically— from where I'm from, if you're going to do a brick house, the entire house is brick.
And what you're going to find in PEI for house builds, you're going to find a ton of old, what I would refer to as an old farmhouse, which would be like a story and a half, right?
Yep.
You're going to find Cape Cods. You're going to find a lot of bungalows because they're easy to build, even though they're more expensive to build. Then the other houses you're going to find here, particularly in the cities, is the split entries. Lots of split entries. You don't see a lot of back splits, side splits. Mainly split entries.
Yeah, I'd say most of the back splits or side splits that I've come across are probably, based on when we're airing this podcast, probably about 25 to 35 years old by this point.
Siding, you're going to find lots of vinyl siding. I would say that would be most predominant. Wood clapboard, cedar shingles, which would be probably more expensive and used, it says right here, in older and higher end homes. Bold colors are common. You talked about that. Reds, yellows, greens, and blues, probably predominant to their ethnic background.
Yeah, and you will see a lot of whites, grays as well, blacks I've even seen, which I don't think I would myself personally use those, like a black color or anything for a house build. I just think that would be kind of hot.
I would think so. Roofing, asphalt. That is the standard. Steel roofs are starting to come in. You're a big proponent of steel roofs. I don't like them. If it was my house, I wouldn't put a steel roof on it.
It may not look the prettiest from the road, but if we do get one of those really bad hurricanes, I did my steel roof on my house, probably the house about 2 years before Fiona in 2022. And I did the steel roof on my office building August 2022. And both of them were intact after that storm hit. So I'm a huge advocate and proponent for them.
Foundations. Back in the old days on the island, we would have island stone and then we had concrete blocks. And today you're going to find poured concrete. And on a very few higher end builds, if you want to call them that, you're going to see ICF or insulated concrete foundation or forms. And stone. You don't see a lot of stone.
No, but the houses, again, now we're back to the older farmhouses that have that old island stone, and some, I know of one that is in the New Glasgow area, and it's got the giant island stone blocks. That's worth a little bit of money today, and it's quite impressive to see how that would have been constructed. Those rocks would have been very heavy for them to be constructing that home, so it would have been an impressive home back in the day.
Windows and doors, nothing new here. Double hung and casement windows, white trim is almost universal. In other words, they're probably white vinyl windows, double pane. You rarely ever see triple pane windows. I might have seen it maybe on a handful of houses.
Maybe on a newer build, but not something that's—
Even on newer builds, you don't typically see them. One of the challenges with triple pane windows is they're not only isolating temperature, but they're also isolating sound, which can turn your house into a sound studio, and it's almost deafening. It's so quiet. You had that happen with an ICF house where they had the probably triple pane windows, but the walls were made out of cement or ICF.
The house was almost sickening. I remember the listing appointment and getting the contract signed there, and I couldn't understand why, because it was nothing that I'd ever experienced. It just felt like a headache sickness, and the the husband looked over at me and he said, "Are you okay, Patty?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm just feeling a little off right now." And he said, "It might be that I need to crack a window. This house is really airtight." And as soon as he opened the window, it was like the pressure was relieved. And I, after that, I wouldn't have believed it if someone told me that this is the experience, but I experienced it firsthand.
I had a house listed in the Rustico area, and it was a bungalow, but even the floor was cement, the walls were cement, triple pane windows, and they had to keep a window cracked open even in the winter because it was so isolating. So something to keep in mind, you're typically not going to find that in too many builds. You had your finger up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, with regards to bay or picture windows that are common in main living areas, something that maybe our buyers may not be aware of is you will pay a little bit of a premium on your insurance because those are more expensive to replace in the event that you did need to make a claim.
More liability there from storms too.
Correct.
The layout. Typically, your house is going to be three bedrooms. If you get into fours and fives, they're going to be diminished in quantity quite quickly. We don't have a lot of super large homes here. 1.5 to 2.5 bathrooms are most common. Open concept kitchens and living rooms and newer builds. Basements are typical, finished or unfinished, depending on the age. When they say that, I would say if it's an old farmhouse, they're probably not going to finish the basement, or even if it's in the city. But if it's a newer home, something built, you know, 1960s, even 50s on, a lot of them would have the basement finished.
Yeah, and a standard house on PEI, and you can tell me what your thoughts are, Michael, but I always say around 2,100 square feet, give or take.
I think you're too big.
You think I'm too big?
I would guess, and we can probably research this for a future episode, probably 17, 18 would be my guess, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathroom.
Okay, so we'll...
You always want to have 2 bathrooms because one is going to fail, and when it does, it's always going to be New Year's Eve or Friday night when you can't get a plumber and you don't have another bathroom.
Yeah, I agree. 1.5, which just means 1 full and 1 half bath that just has a toilet and a sink in it, should be something that most, and actually they do, most consumers, when they set up, I set up a custom collaboration site for them, request 2 bathrooms minimum.
Heat sources, most common, I don't even have to look at the list, is going to be oil-fired burner with water-filled radiators. More modern houses, you're going to see heat pumps. You're also going to see in some homes wood stoves, propane fireplaces. We do not have natural gas here that's piped in. And they say here newer builds often go for full heat pump systems. I don't think I've seen a house with just heat pumps.
Yeah, I have. A newer one, probably about 2 weeks ago, it was just a heat pump system.
I would be leery when it's January and that heat pump system doesn't work, although the newer heat pump systems are a lot better than they used to be. But it used to be you'd have to have a backup, whether it's a propane fireplace or something else.
Yeah, and when you say you have to have a backup, it's an insurance company requirement, typically.
I wasn't aware of that, but I do know heat pump technology, from what I understand, was invented and used down in the southern states, and then it migrated up north, and they found out it wouldn't be conducive to our Arctic weather, and they discovered this in January, February, and that's why they needed a backup source, which would usually be in the form of electric heat and or like an electric radiator or a propane fireplace.
Yeah, propane fireplaces are quite popular and common, too.
Garages, on a scale of 0 to 1, how popular are garages in PEI?
I would say they are popular for people who are migrating to the island, but I don't find islanders they don't really care. I've actually had one client many years ago when I was saying, oh, you know, you use your garage as, you know, for storage. And he just called it an above ground basement. And he found it stupid to put your car in.
I don't think I've ever been anywhere in my life where there's such a lack of garages than in Prince Edward Island. So what I tell people, if they're setting up a search, and I'd love to hear your input, never specify must have garage. A garage is something you can always add to a property. And by adding that in a search term, you're going to eliminate a lot of houses.
Yeah, it depends, though, if you're looking in the city, as much as it seems like it could be an easy addition. I had a property under contract subject to the approval of the city.
I'm not looking in the city.
Okay, well, if these are rural properties, that's something different. But if it is a property in the city, just in case one of our listeners might think, oh, well, I'll just expand my search and see if I can include one. It is, you do have to get a building approval, and not all city lots will allow or approve a garage on the property.
Good point. I was looking at a really nice house that would have been a perfect flip, and someone actually did buy it to flip it. And they had much better vision than I have, which is none. And what they did is they put in a garage at a 90-degree angle to the front of the house, and it actually turned out looking super slick. So it's something to consider. I hate garages that are at a 90-degree angle, because every time I see one, they've either backed into the mid-pillar, side pillar, or the door, trying to maneuver at 90 degrees to try to get into their garage.
But it's an option. It's an option. And yeah, I'm not really a big fan of them, but that just means I won't be the one buying that house.
Yard and landscaping. Large yards. I would have to say that is correct. I remember living in my hometown, which is Burlington, Ontario. By the time your neighbor would back out of his garage, his car would be halfway across the street and in the park. They're that much on the road. Here we do have relatively large yards. Of course, they would diminish in certain areas of downtown Charlottetown or Summerside. And what do they say here? Decks, sheds, and garden plots are popular. Would you say that?
I don't know if
most
garden...
people have a shed and most... a deck.
And I guess if you're going to refer to a garden plot as having a flower bed out the front of your property.
Or they could be using the English term of garden, which means yard.
Okay, perhaps. I would say yes, most people have all of those checked.
Trees are often used as windbreaks, typically in the country.
Well, even in the city, I mean, I know on my property, I am so grateful for the trees that surround it because... I mean, I can be at home leaving my property thinking, why is the news saying it's so windy out there? It doesn't look that bad. And then only to drive into town and realize how strong the winds actually are and how much of a windbreaker my trees around the property really do create and shelter. Trees also on properties create a filtration system. If you are talking about rural properties on your own well water, they are a great system with the root system in the ground to help filter the water and keep it clean.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So that wraps up what you're going to find in PEI is a typical house. A search that your agent or broker will set up will invariably show you how many houses fit within your parameters. Next, we're going to talk, or actually, before we get into the next topic, I think the main things I would look for in a house, and then you can tell me what your list is, foundations. Our soil is very porous, and I want to make sure that there's no river or indoor pool in my basement. Number two, I'm going to be looking for plumbing, particularly from the late 90s, early 2000s, that was problematic, like Kitech. I'm going to check out the electrical panel for amperage wiring, see if it's copper. Same with plumbing. Is it copper? Is it plastic? And that's about it. Structure, of course. I want to make sure that when I'm walking around the house, I don't feel like I'm drunk and I'm falling all over the place, because if you put a bowling ball on the floor, it's going to fly through the wall because it's so unlevel.
Yeah, and that's something too, if you are looking at properties and you do happen to have a marble or two, might be good just to throw in your pocket so that you can test some of the floors in properties. There might move a little bit, but if it rolls all the way to a corner or a sidewall, you might have some issues there and want to take a little extra time down in the basement. My list is pretty consistent with yours. Foundations are really important. I look for efflorescence, the crystallization of, you know, indicating that there is a high water table outside. Perhaps water isn't being properly channeled away from the foundation or
that's
the
like a white, fuzzy looking growthy thing on your walls in the basement.
Yeah, and that's if the basement's not finished. You're able to see that. If it's finished and all the concrete walls are covered, you're not going to be able to see this. but that is something that I typically take a look at. I'm also trying to look maybe in corners, like bathrooms and areas around the air exchange systems, anything like mold, anything showing maybe that the air system isn't clean and indicates a little bit of extra dust buildup. I also like to make sure that there isn't any mold. Again, I try my best, and that's going to be from a home inspection standpoint. For resaleability, I always advise my clients, as much as you may say this is your last house, I try for myself to find something that would allow or conducive to a more vast pool of buyers going forward, should I need to sell that place, which 3+ bedrooms and again, at least 2+ baths would be most desirable.
You sound like a professional real estate investor that's worrying more about how you can exit, what your exit strategy is, rather than getting into a house, which is a smart way of doing things. One final tip, if you want to be really nitpicky, I don't know if you've ever done this, but take your laser level to the bedrooms and the other rooms, living, kitchen, bathrooms. Do measurements from one end to the other and see if they vary by millimeters, and you can see how precise the house was built.
Yeah, I've not done that for that reason.
I did
it,
but I'm crazy.
Yes, and I think everyone's catching on.
What's really cool is when you have a house and the rooms are exactly right on the foot. Seen that before with the drywall?
Yes.
12 feet, 11 feet. Like, what are the odds of that? But the house was built so concisely that the measurements all align right to the inch. That's cool. Moving along, and this is a question that's been coming up more often than not in 2025, buying a home in Canada if you're from the U.S.
Yes, there are more, I'm finding. So we're in April, and without having this be anything political, but now that it's April 2025, we are starting to see more Americans reaching out to us. We haven't, I don't believe, at our office yet, have any that have put in an offer, secured a property, but they're starting to ask questions, looking for education and information to perhaps begin the process.
You were on the analytics for this podcast, which I never look at, and I will continue not to look at them because it doesn't matter to me. But you indicated that 25% of the listeners were from the U.S., which is pretty decent. That's a pretty high percentage. So the question here, is it hard for Americans to buy property in PEI? Absolutely not. There is an issue right now in Canada where you can only certainly buy in certain areas based on the census map. You can ask your agent or broker about that if you're a non-Canadian resident, but it's basically would be the more highly populated areas. As far as getting a mortgage, I would suggest if you have equity in a house and it's paid off in the States, take a mortgage out on it or a line of credit and buy your house here cash. There are banks that do deal cross-border, particularly TD Bank. I'm not sure who else is doing that these days, but pulling equity out is probably a lot easier. Comments?
No, I completely agree along with that would be the easiest way for a non-Canadian to be able to purchase in, and whether it's Canada or Prince Edward Island.
And we'll close this off with a simple question, and I'm going to aim this at you because we're getting into 34 minutes here.
Okay.
If I'm looking to buy property on the island and I'm looking at the North or the South Shore, what's the difference if there is one?
So my understanding, and I feel like I'm on the hot seat here, but I guess I am, the North Shore's water, if you're looking for a lifestyle going to the beach, is a little colder than the South Shore. If you're a seafood junkie and you want to live close to where the seafood, go down to the local marina or harbor to be able to purchase directly from the fishermen when they come in, I have been told that seafood from the North Shore, because of the colder water, is sweeter. It is a better tasting than the South Shore. So if you're a fisherman, I'm sorry, but this is just information that I've been told. So if you're fishing off the South Shores and you think your seafood catches are just as good as the North, I apologize, but this is the information that has been shared and provided with me. Your thoughts, Michael?
My thoughts are the North Shore is colder water. You have higher undercurrents. You have more of a prolific ocean feel with the white caps and the wind. You can notice the trees are usually at about a 30 degree angle in certain parts, erosion can be higher. You can check the map on the provincial website for that. South Shore is going to offer you nicer, warmer weather, shallower beaches sometimes. You do have views of Nova Scotia, sometimes the bridge. Lighthouses can be viewed on both shores. I just find they're more predominant on the south. So they both have their pluses and minuses. But if you want that genuine ocean feel, go to the north, because there that's where you're going to hear the crashing waves, not so much on the south.
Yeah, that raw ocean experience, which a lot of people, that's what they're looking for.
Absolutely. So we're going to shut her down. Patty, tell us about MAPS.
The Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, the Prince Edward Island podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling process and a little bit of Prince Edward Island fun facts and information. We appreciate every one of you tuning in, downloading, and listening to us do our little conversations about Prince Edward Island every week and sharing our stories to hopefully help protect you.
And if you're looking for more information about Prince Edward Island, be sure to check out our YouTube channels, our Twitter or X feeds. We both have a weekly newsletter. And what else?
That's
Instagram?
There's lots of
everywhere.
Social media.
Oh, and both of our websites do have extensive lists of mapping tools and tools that will help you get tourist magazines and information about things to do on the island. So go to our websites. On my website, you click on links. What about yours?
I don't know how to get to. So you have specifically on the top. I'm going to look that up.
Don't go to Patty's website. There's nothing there. It's an empty abyss.
Abyss? I do have, Powerhouse Realty has what's called a Linktree. It is a software program that I guess was originated and developed in Australia. It has some really cool links in there for everything that you would need from, you know, realtor.ca, interesting questions and fun facts, government site links. There's a lot of information in there.
Good. Can you send me that and I'll put it on my website so they don't have to visit yours? Everybody have a great day. Be sure to follow the podcast if this is something you're interested in. Give us a 5-star rating and any feedback. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy.
Have a great day.